It's been a long time since we have talked about a 1980s New World Pictures movie. And I have to say, it was like putting a home crocheted warm Afghan around me and just being like, oh yeah, this is what it was like.
Bro, this would be the only podcast where people would be like, well, what a comforting film standalone is.
This movie has all the things. It has all the pacing and
problems.
Poor set design that just makes me, it's like a Fig Newton of a movie where I'm I don't know that I like these. But I like them.
Dramatic scenes where they don't bother to get coverage. They just shoot it all in one shot.
It's all of this. Introducing a character 20 minutes into the movie that is pivotal to the whole movie with no backstory.
That's New World. That's the New World.
And that character's costumes are just high-waisted dress pants, a button-down shirt, and then a robe.
Oh, I miss these days. These are the salad days of New World.
Yeah.
Was that the intro? Do we say music?
Music.
Pictures podcast, where we're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
I am so happy to be here. Thanks, everybody. I'm returning guest. Really excited to be here. Thanks, everyone.
You're a host. And Erica.
Do you guys want to hear me play my trumpet? I brought it. You guys want to hear a little trumpet music?
To the street with your trumpet.
Fine.
And we are in the start of June Boom. That's right. We're talking about the action movies released by New World Pictures. Last year, we did June Vroom. And before that, we did June Gloom. But this year, we're doing June Boom. Action movies for the month of June. And joining us for this episode, he's the boss. He's the man who runs our podcast network, Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. And he's also the host of The Disconnected and 20 other podcasts. Ryan Verrill is back on the show.
Returning host, thank you. Thank you. So glad you keep continuing to pay me. I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, you're the only one on payroll. It's not sure how we did that. And we are starting off this June boom with a real eventual bang.
Oh boy.
Because the action can't start soon enough, because you've got a long time for the action to actually start in 1985's Stand Alone.
He was just an average American who tried to do the right thing.
If you don't want to get involved, just tell us.
If I can help you, I will.
And then he became a target. Because sometimes when a man stands up for what's right,
this is my house,
he has to stand alone.
I am death. Come with me.
Stand Alone, the story of a real American hero. Charles Durning, Pam Grier, Stand Alone, rated R.
That's right. 1985 Stand Alone, brought to you by Mrs. Whitehead's Neighborhood Watch. Tired of all the noise in your neighborhood? Too many people having fun in broad daylight? Mm-hmm. Well, don't worry, because Mrs. Whitehead is going to stop it. With her finely tuned ears, she can hear just about any tomfoolery or horseplay from miles away. And she doesn't mind getting out of her bed in the dead of night and telling the culprits to stop. Heck, she'll call the police if she has to. She will stop it, Mr. Thibodeau. This movie was directed by Alan Beatty, more notably a producer, as this is the third and final movie he directed, including he directed 1981's Delusion and 1975's Double Talk. Anyone seen those? Anybody complete the trifecta of the Alan Beatty directing experience?
I've seen it.
Oh, yes? Mark, is that, you've seen it?
No, oh. I have not at all.
No one raised their hand. Well, more importantly, this star is Charles Durning, whose legendary career includes The Sting, Dog Day Afternoon, Tootsie, and also this.
Wait, he was in
Tootsie? I love the question mark at the end of that.
He was in Tootsie.
He played the dad.
The dad who falls in love with Dustin Hoffman, not realizing mm-hmm. that Dustin's a lady.
Oh, that's right.
Played the titular Toots.
Oh my god. Well, he's really got a type. First Mrs. Whitehead, then
he doesn't have any romantic aspirations for Mrs. Whitehead, that's for sure.
We'll go there.
Oh, I don't know about that. They've banged.
They've totally banged. Come on, he's just gonna fix her window. No questions asked. Come on. Betty. Oh, Betty was double hung. Wait.
When his son comes out of that tank and they shoot the little shot and breaks his window, he has like a little look like, ugh, which isn't like, oh man, we've broken her window. Holy crap. It's like, ugh, I'm going to pay a real sexual price for that.
Yeah.
It's going to get drafty when I sneak in there tonight.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Night's not for you. That night's for her. Okay.
Charles Durning, a few years prior to this, had received back-to-back Academy Award nominations for The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas with his pal Burt Reynolds, and which was won by The Punisher's Lou Gossett Jr., by the way. He's the one who won for An Officer and a Gentleman. He also then the next year up for Mel Brooks's To Be or Not to Be in 1983, which Jack Nicholson won for Terms of Endearment.
But also, way before that, he was also in the Battle of the Bulge in December 1944.
Yes, he was. So he was.
This is a guy that is acting out of personal experience.
Yes.
In this movie.
Earlier in 1985, Durning had appeared in a short-lived detective drama called Eye to Eye, which Durning admitted in June 1985 that he did for the money, and he had a rule for the show, which was no guns. Durning said he, quote, disliked guns. He went on, I didn't always dislike guns. In fact, when I was younger, I did a lot of hunting, but World War II changed that for me.
Oh.
And so to that end, Mark, of course, he shoots that after this, but he was, yes, in World War II. He started off as an infantryman, participated in D-Day. And he said that the first guy in front of him was shot and the third guy on the boat was shot, and he was the second.
Oh.
It was one of three serious injuries that he received while he was in the armed services, and that's why he gets discharged, and he gets to go fulfill his dream to become an actor. And Durning shot that TV show, Eye for Eye, after he did this. So maybe it's this role that made him decide he didn't want guns in the TV show. I'm not sure. I don't know. But he also revealed that his performance in 1984's Mass Appeal, which that was a movie that didn't do as well, and he played a sort of Monsignor in that movie, and I guess he says that he started to think that, quote, my type of character acting might be going out, end quote, which is why he ended up doing the series. So he's maybe getting a little nervous about what kind of roles he's going to get, which would certainly explain this movie.
Quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I'd have to think the paycheck, but we'll get into that in just a little bit. This also stars Pam Grier in her only new World film, The Second Ownership Group. Grier broke into film with New World, of course, but this at this particular time in the 1980s, she kind of raised her reputation beyond exploitation films due to 1981's Fort Apache, The Bronx. And then 1983's Something Wicked This Way Comes, which he was very happy with, but unfortunately was not the hit that Disney wanted it to be at that time. It has become
which
much
is
more
such
revered.
A shame.
Huge shame. We were huge fans of that movie at the time. We saw it in the theater, and we were scared shitless of Pam Grier in that movie.
Oh, I still love that movie.
Yeah.
It's great.
Fantastic. But so after this, Grier would appear in the 1986 drama Over the Edge with Bruce Dern and the Frankenstein-inspired The Vindicator, which is a Canadian film from CoverGirl director Jean-Claude Lord.
Oh, is that something we're going to talk about later? Are you just like giving us a little foreshadowing?
Will we be able to talk about The Vindicator at some point? I don't know. I hope so. Man, I'd love that. I don't think New World had anything to do with it in any way, but I would love it if we could squeeze that in. If you, by the way, have bought Pam Grier's autobiography, Foxy, like I did, and were hoping that you could get a choice nugget of her talking about Standalone, this period of her career, which includes The Vindicator and Over the Edge, that's just glossed over. It goes from Something Wicked This Way Comes to the Steven Seagal film that she did. And so it just skips from 83 to 87. So all this period is just, she just doesn't worry about it. So, oh, well.
I can't imagine why she'd want to forget this.
I can't imagine either. Why wouldn't she want to talk about it? Here's where you can watch Standalone if you want to watch it. At the time of this recording, it's in one place. You can see it on Tubi.
Tubi.
And that's about it. Or you can buy this, I believe, out of print Blu-ray from Scorpion Releasing, which I have right here in my hands.
Lucky you. You can also buy it on Amazon.
Yes, I mean, you can rent it and purchase it. I just, you know, there's other places you can rent it, but I just meant like...
By the way, you can rent it for $3.99 right now, at the time of this recording, or you can buy it for $4.99.
Which did you do, Mark?
Oh, I bought it. I committed to this.
Does the Amazon purchase version also have the awkward ripple effect when they pan in any scene like Tubi does?
No, I didn't see that.
I saw a crisp Blu-ray.
I have packed away my Blu-ray. I do own it, but I at the last moment had to watch it on Tubi, and man,
Tubi.
It pans in any scene, it's like in the middle of the camera moving, they're like, hold on, let me put a different lens on there, and it's just really awkward.
Wow. Oh no. Well, enjoy, everybody wants to watch it on Tubi. It's time to talk about what this movie is about. Mark, what is Standalone about?
You know, Standalone is about the fact that, you know, in a world where fast casual dining and chain restaurants rule the gastronomy landscape, finding a good old-fashioned diner is hard to find.
Mm.
And not just any diner, really. I mean, like, the kind that you love, the kind of diner that serves only desserts and coffee, and the owners know what you want before you sit your butt in the seat because they only serve coffee and desserts. They always have a small but diverse collection of cigarettes for sale and a menu that starts at pricing of 85 cents. Like, those diners are hard to find.
Yeah.
And we should celebrate them because they are a part of Americana. And they're a part of Americana that we're losing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the kind of diner that says, sit a spell. And by spell, I mean all day. We have your magazines. We have a newspaper. They're ours, but you may use them. Please don't leave. You'll be here all day.
Right. Yeah. And are you going to want to go home and eat? Yes. But you got to hang out with some friends.
That's right. Ryan. What is this movie about?
This movie is simply about gratifying feelings. If somebody wants a donut, you better fucking give it to them.
Yeah, come on.
If somebody wants to play the trumpet, you better let them play it.
Yeah.
But also, if you want to live in a quiet neighborhood, don't you dare shoot a gun in your fucking garage.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Your id has limits.
Yeah, yes. I've learned that the hard way.
Yeah,
for sure.
Wait, I want to hear more. What is the hard way of that, Mark?
I know we're not at final questions, but I have a question for the team. don't know, because I don't have a handgun. But if you're shooting a handgun multiple times, isn't it hot? Can you immediately tuck it down into your pants? Wouldn't it be hot?
Yes.
You probably can.
No, you can. You absolutely can.
When you have no feeling and
in your butt crack?
In your butt and lower back. Then it's fine.
Oh,
it's perfectly fine.
Well,
Erica, what is this movie about?
For me, this movie was about grandparents. And you have the grandparents that you think you know based on stories and pictures. But there's always another side to grandparents that you don't know and you don't see.
That's true.
And this movie is about one special boy who gets to see a side of his grandpa he never thought he would see. Let him walk to the ambulance because he just spent a night killing people. So stand aside, grandson.
Stand alone, stand aside.
Now, question on that other side of the grandparents that you're seeing, is that because all he's ever seen is the theatrical poster, which clearly shaves off 124 pounds off of Charles Durden?
Yes. Yes.
By the way, that is
pre-AI.
Yeah, or this is out before Photoshop. They were just able to...
They did him dirty, though, because then on the back... They do him dirty, and then they put this on the back. I'm like, they really did him dirty.
Yeah, they got a picture of him on the back that you know, shows it. But yeah.
Durning only paid for the front.
This is like the theatrical poster, and that gets called out. Like, I read a Texas newspaper that was like, what's up with the poster? Like, Charles Durning, they made him look like, you know, like he's this thin guy, like making him look, definitely doing a Walking Tall kind of situation with the poster there. With him holding a bat, which, by the way, he doesn't use in the movie, but he also doesn't look like that. So, I mean, you know, that's not the movie. But anyway.
Like, that's a picture of me that I had last weekend.
You pose like Charles Durning?
It's a bat. I'm just saying... cut this. But I'm just saying... like,
where are you going?
That was so good.
Where are you going with this?
Ryan and Erica just had an aneurysm in response.
We were like, oh my God. What?
We're both like,
what are you talking about? For me, this movie was about a man with the recipe for the world's greatest donut that gets mixed up in the criminal underworld and pays a heavy price.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He just made a delicious donut, guys. Mm-hmm. Why can't we just leave him alone?
Yeah.
It's a shame, really.
He made a donut people would kill for.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, let's move on to the Letterboxd synopsis. We are on Letterboxd. Are you on Letterboxd, Ryan? I imagine you are.
Always, of course.
Yeah, of course. At all times. You're on it. You have that app
literally
on your
right
phone.
Right this moment.
Always. You're logging a film as we speak. This is the synopsis. So follow Ryan. Follow us. A World War II vet is pushed to the limit when gang members and drug dealers take over his neighborhood. Okay, that's it, but that's not true.
That also the description for Gran Torino?
Right, right. That's
and
actually
17 Bronson films.
It's yeah, and yeah, Death Wish 3. and 4.
Like, did you do cross reference on that and determine like, hey, this is the description of 15 other movies?
That's definitely
the Venn diagram.
That's definitely the Gran Torino synopsis. Not really this one. He inadvertently gets these gang members and or drug dealers to go after him because he witnesses a murder. They don't take over his neighborhood. They go directly to his house. They don't take over the neighborhood. So,
I think Mrs. Whitehead will be the judge of if they've taken over the neighborhood or not. Or stay in your own lane, Ryan. Okay, all right, just stay in your lane. She's not on lockdown.
It's not the whole neighborhood because she has no problem going and walking down the road to the grocery store and walking back to her place with groceries in hand. She's like, "Listen, your house is problematic. My house is fine." So can you figure out the whole shit going on with your house?
Really loud here, guys.
We got a neighborhood really loud. Here, guys.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get into the movie where we start in the South Pacific in 1943. And what we learn is a flashback for our main character, Lou Thibodeau. Louis Thibodeau, or as most people call him, Mr. Thibodeau.
No, they say Louis about 150 times in this movie.
But often they call him Mr. Thibodeau. That even his grandson talks, say, why does everybody call you Mr. Thibodeau? He even asks him that.
Pam Grier is like, Louis. No, I'm telling you, Louis. Louis. No, Louis.
Right.
Louis. We have to do this Louis. I'm like, I counted and 75 times that they said Louis, and I was not covering the entire movie.
You did a Louis count?
It was
count?
Ridiculous.
You did a Louis count? Louis count?
I did a Louis wow. count.
Well, there is no titty count, so you kind of had... We needed a count of some kind.
Correct.
So thank you for filling in. Also, that should tell everybody what an exciting film this is, that Mark counted all the Louises in the movie. He's like, well, I'm here. I might as well count all the Louises.
Is it Thibodeau or Thibodeau?
Great question, because there is an NBA coach with that name, and his name gets pronounced all sorts of ways. I'm like, can we all come together and decide how we're going to pronounce this name? I say
and
Thibodeau.
And that coach's name technically is Thibodeau. Thibs.
That's
not
right.
Tibbs.
But that's
Thibodeau.
It's called Tibbs. He's called Tibbs colloquially. But in this movie, he's called Thibodeau or Lewis, sometimes Lou. But he has this...
and sometimes Grandpa.
And sometimes Gramps or Graham or something like that. Gramp, I think. That's what his grandson calls him.
Oh.
Gordy, that's right. He has this flashback in the very beginning, and he's actually... Which he is played by Charles Durning's son, Douglas.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Look at that.
Yeah. And we get a very brief flashback where he's in a cave, and there's some Japanese soldiers... And we don't know really the end result other than he does kill one of the soldiers as they stab him. But we don't really see the rest of it. We're told it later, which is ominous for this movie because that's the kind of action that you're going to see for the first hour. You're going to be told things.
Yeah, it's verbal action.
You could see it, but we're not going to see it. We're going to talk about it, sure, but we're not going to see it, okay? Yeah. Wait to the end. Then we might show you a little something. Mm-hmm. But we cut to the present. We see Durning is now a lovable grandpa who plays with a remote-controlled tank with his grandson. He's a World War II veteran who loves to spend his days in his favorite diner, run by his old Marine buddy, Patty, here in clip one.
Patty? Don't be quiet, isn't it, Patty?
Oh, yeah. You know, in 17 minutes, the hungry ward from State Mental Hospital is going to push through that door screaming for lunch. I'm going to eat some breakfast. You want something?
No.
Hey. I'm going to cook you something. You just relax, read the paper. It'll only be a minute.
Patty.
Hey, Polly, put some eggs on for Lou and me.
No, my favorite part of that clip is he's like, I'm going to make you some breakfast. He's like, I don't really want any breakfast. He's like, no. And then he goes to the back and he goes, hey, put some eggs on. I'm like, you're not going to do, what are you doing back there? You're not going to do jack shit.
He's going back there to poop.
He's going back.
He's got to poop.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm gonna make you some breakfast. Wink, wink. I'm gonna go back here and poop for 20 minutes. This other guy's gonna make you breakfast. When I come out from pooping, I'm gonna grab both our plates and bring them out.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, he says, make some eggs for you and me. He's also self-serving. Like, I want some eggs too. I mean, if we're gonna do this. But no eggs are ever delivered because this diner has, I don't think it would ever pass the health code at all. This is a rough looking diner.
When you see that clip and you hear that clip, you can probably guess what's going to happen next. And that is that a guy is going to come in. He's going to get impatient. He's going to try to steal a couple donuts, and then he's going to be murdered by a couple other guys who walk in with a shotgun. It's just a typical Los Angeles afternoon.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, that's just the day in the life of a diner.
Yeah,
you know?
It is a gross diner, and I wouldn't want any food there either. That's why I think Charles Durning is like, no, thank you.
That bottomless cup of coffee is
undeniable. Hard to resist. Hard to resist.
Yeah, so good.
But Charles Durning witnesses this murder and out in the middle of the daytime, as most of this movie is shot in the daytime until it's not, till the very end. And his buddy is taking a break that whole time. So he goes to the police. Lewis goes to the police station to see if he can identify the shooters. And that's when we enter James the Keech from New World's Cannonball and Love Letters.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Love Letters. Our fan favorite.
Yes. Yeah. Erica's one of Erica's favorite there. Yeah. He's playing Detective Isgro in this.
And his dad is named Stacy.
Yes.
Which I learned back in Love Letters days. And I got to remember again.
She knows this. A lot about the Keaches. This is one of his last movies as an actor. He does go on to produce and direct more things. But he was kind of trying to already. He sold a movie to ABC, which was about the first baseball player who had only one arm. And that was a movie that he makes shortly after this. Okay. He becomes more of a producer, a director. He does do another movie with Charles Durning called The Man Who Broke 1,000 Chains, which is also stars Val Kilmer, the late Val Kilmer.
Oh, wow.
But largely he becomes kind of a director. He eventually marries Jane Seymour and he directs 26 episodes of Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman.
Wow.
Oh, Ryan, do you still have your t-shirt?
Oh my God. No, I had a t-shirt in college that I got from a cereal box, offering that was Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman. And I wore it all the time because I thought it was absolutely hilarious that they would be.
That was the most 1992 sentence I've ever heard.
It was incredible. incredible. Yeah. I was like, with this top of the cereal box and $15, I can get myself this Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman t-shirt. Just me and I don't know who else who would have ordered that. But I love that shirt.
I can attest. In college, Ryan wore the shit of that shirt.
Oh, yeah. I was so proud of how dumb that shirt was. And
I can attest that when we met, he still owned it. Am I the reason you don't own it anymore?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think I just wore that thing out. I don't think it yeah. Here's the ultimate joke, which to me, of course, was one of those ironic t-shirts that made me smile. But I think a lot of people were like, damn, that dude really likes Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman. Mm-hmm. That dude's like super into that show. He wears that shit out all the time.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, oh well.
I'm telling you, it worked with the ladies, right, Ryan?
Boy. As repellent.
Thanks. Thanks, guys. Guess I'm right here.
Also at the station is Pam Grier, who's playing attorney Catherine, who just happens to be an old friend of Lewis's somehow. They've known each other.
Which they don't explain.
They don't explain, but she says, I've known you my whole life. She says several times. So however that happened, doesn't matter. But she starts looking into his situation because he's witnessed these murders. She learns the men who shot and killed this guy in the diner in broad daylight are not good guys. That's what she discovers. I mean, who would have guessed that? And she talks to the Keach about it in clip two.
What can I do for you?
Please don't bring Thibodeau down here again.
Excuse me? I'm afraid I don't understand what you're talking about.
Your witness has no idea what a cocaine cowboy is. Why haven't you told him?
Well, frankly, I didn't see what difference it would make.
I've known this man all my life, and I know you're putting the screws to him. And I'm just asking you not to.
Listen, Miss Boland. Your friend is supposed to be some kind of war hero, right? Well, if he's that kind of guy, he's going to do the right thing. Now, he saw a murder. He saw a murder, and I expect him to identify the man. Now, believe me, I'm not asking him to do anything that I wouldn't do or that you wouldn't do. These people are drug dealers. They're killers. And my partner and I risk our lives. We put our asses on the line every day in the street. I need all the help I can get. Now, please, please, let's not you and me have any problems, okay? Okay? Look, you're a public defender. You defend the criminals. I bust them.
We'll see each other again.
Okay.
I guess Pam Grier's being directed to be like, you got him in this line. We'll see each other again. I'm like, what? Did she win? Did she feel she won? What did she win? Were they arguing? I don't, what was happening in that scene? What is happening?
There's a lot of those quotes that are like that. I mean, Thibodeau tells her, I just witnessed this assassination. She goes, be careful. They have no issues killing people. I just told you.
Right.
Yes, I know.
I know. I watched it happen. I witnessed number one to the fact that they're willing to kill people. Yeah. I mean, it's like, yes, they're bad. And yes, he's a cop and she's a lawyer. I just, And also Cocaine Cowboy, that had to be a huge word at the time, right? Like that had to be like a choice phrase that was going through the news where that was a thing. And the whole thing was like some of the audience who were up on the up and up would know that phrase. But some people, like maybe old Gramps, is not going to be aware of a phrase like that. And that's, whereas I think when we're watching this years later, you're like, oh, was that not something anyone knew, that people smuggled cocaine? Was this just, we were just dawning to that, you know, that,
or that there were cowboys?
Or that they were, right, that there were cowboys? Cocaine Cowboys was just in the 1800s when cowboys would bring cocaine everywhere, right?
Right. It was just the right. Fast-talking cowboys.
Yeah. The ones that really chewed their words. They kept right. chewing all the time.
Right. The yeah. fastest gun yep. in the West. That's how you do it.
Fastest gums in the West.
That's right. That's right. It was often misheard. It's a game of telephone, and everybody said, oh, gun? No, I said gums. God, all right. Well, whatever. He's going to have a better reputation than he deserves, this cocaine addict cowboy. Anyway, now, does anyone else know what happens after this? Because we sort of go with Pam Grier's character for a little while. I feel like the thread, if there is a thread on this movie that's at all tightly wound, it is quickly undone by the proceedings that follow. Can anyone explain what exactly happens?
Something about, if he signs that they were the ones that did it, that they are going to get bail, but ultimately the charges against them will be significantly higher. But then he's worried about his neighborhood or his home, and so he's not going to do that, so that he keeps him in jail for only 12 more hours, in which they go free. Like, I don't understand the upside that's happening here. And this movie spends a lot of time like,
okay,
don't call them out, because then they'll come after you. But I'm like, but they're going to come after you anyway, because they'll be out in 12 hours.
Sure, sure.
There's the insane coincidence first that she sees the only identifying information that she was given by Durning on this guy's tattoo that she happened to be assigned to help translate something.
Mm-hmm.
And they show that tattoo like five more times once he introduces it as the signifier, just in case the audience is like, who's this guy?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the tattoo. Okay, now
I'm planning to get that tattoo this weekend. So is that cool?
That's right. So Ryan, were you at all lost? Were you kind of understanding the sort of legal ramifications that they were trying to jump through for a period of the middle of this movie?
No, it was like I spoke the broken Spanish that they spoke, and that's what I was being fed. It was such an awkward, and not to mention, like, the timelines didn't line up at all. He says, we'll give you one more day, and then I'll release them by noon. You've already cut that in half. That's a half a day. Come on, be fair at least. And then she finds out, like, 14 seconds later, oh, they just left. What are we doing?
Yeah.
I wish I had clipped it, but I didn't. But there's a moment when Pam Grier says, and I translated this for Erica, which is not hard to do, but Pam Grier is frustrated.
I don't know.
Pam Grier is frustrated. She's trying to speak Spanish, and she goes, no estos hombre, no libre. And I'm like, no de guy, no book.
Por favor, señor Ruiz. No quiero estos hombre, no libre, no, would you tell him?
Like, that is, it's like, it's really.
Is it hombre or hombre? Because one's hungry, right?
Right.
And isn't libre free and libro is book?
Yeah, it's true. So she's saying no free, but she's talking about.
Can we focus on that? Ryan just said it was not hard to translate for Erica and then got everything wrong.
No, I did not get everything wrong.
Thank you.
She said guys. She did not say hunger.
Thank you, Ryan.
No, but this timeline is funnier and we are leaning into
all
it,
right.
Damn it.
That's fair. Look, my Spanish is just as bad as Pam Grier's, but Pam Grier was reading the script.
That's low bar.
She's being told to say this. She was given this as a script. But anyway, here's what's really happening. So she finds out that these guys are bad, right? And what happens is they stole a car. So the guys that shot this guy in the restaurant stole a car. And so they got put in jail and processed. She calls a lawyer to try to say, hey, keep them in jail. Now, if you're going to be in jail because you're suspected of a crime, they can only hold you for 48 hours. And that's what she's told. And that's true. They end up holding them for longer than 48 hours, which if at that point you have to charge somebody with a crime, which they didn't because they were on the street. So I don't know how they held them. That means, I don't know, they're going to have, if they get a good lawyer, the city's in trouble. But in any case, that's what she's doing. She's trying to then get like this couple that got the car stolen to come forward and actually, you know, say that these guys stole the car so she can get them on a Grand Theft Auto rap instead of the murder charge and keep Lewis from having to testify at all and put himself in harm's way. That's what she's trying to do. That's what the plot is trying to do. But you don't know that if you watch the film.
Did he translate that clearly for everyone? I just want to check in and make sure. Am I the only one that's crystal clear on this now? Or
I'm just grateful you read the novelization.
Well, I wrote the novelization, guys. It's just, there's bits and pieces of that story that they sprinkle in. And so you have to kind of do some work.
Oh, wait. The couple that she goes to see, that's who had the car stolen?
Correct.
Oh, I thought she was just talking to those people for just no reason at all.
Just shits and giggles.
Oh.
Just like, it was just other people she's known for her whole life. Hey, guys.
That's right.
I didn't know why she was talking to those people. Oh.
And it didn't do well because when she has to talk to the guys in jail as a public defender, she goes in and then she starts trying to speak some Spanish to him and is like, no Spanish. I must back away from you.
To the point that he finally gives up, he's like, God, fuck. All right, fine. I speak English. Let me just talk to you in English. This is exhausting.
It was such an assault to his ears. He's like, fine.
It was like she was in a cafe in France. They were like, please, let's just speak English. Do not try to speak our language. This is disgusting. But anyway, that's what's actually trying to happen. Meanwhile, Lou is putting himself in further danger because he's tracking down the perpetrators to their favorite Burbank billiards hall. And they're very easy to spot because they drive that same red van and they leave their windows rolled down and the shotgun clearly on the front seat.
Yeah.
I don't know, Ryan. I feel like that billiards hall could be in Van Nuys.
It's not because they're near San Fernando Road.
Fair.
And the mountains are right behind them. So, they're in Burbank.
Corrected immediately.
They're in Burbank.
Jeez, the Where's Waldo of the podcast showed up.
Oh, I investigated the hell out of that. I think I might even know exactly where it is. It might still be a billiards hall to this day, but I'm not 100%.
Ryan, please save these kind of logistics for the MapCast, where we intimately discuss locations, latitudes, longitudes. Tune in if you love maps, 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 maps.
Bring your latitudes, your longitudes, and your tudes.
Bring your latitudes,
you
your longitudes, and leave your attitudes.
Then you're going to laugh-itudes at our podcast.
There it is.
Right?
People are probably already trying to find it.
Right. It's only us trying to put a tude to many different things for an hour. It's worth it.
With me, your latitude, Ryan.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Bente aquí, amigos. anyway, I love that they just had their shotgun just clearly out with their window rolled down. That just killed me.
Well, maybe it was hot. Maybe they just fired it.
You want to keep it cool.
Cool down before you stuff it in your
pants. That's right. He also then immediately gets caught and he has to run off from them, which I don't want to get to. We're going to get to favorite scenes in just a second, but you know, spoiler warning for that. Thankfully, we get to more of the feud between the Keach and Pam Grier. And it really comes to a head when Charles Durning is brought to the station to identify the shooters. And they have a very big dramatic scene that I like to call...
The shouting match.
Yes, that I like to call Everybody Shouts.
Tell me you clip this audio.
This is my favorite scene.
Lewis, come here. Do you Wait a second. You know you're not supposed to do that. Now
do
get
you
out
know
of here.
What's going
to
happen to him tomorrow? They're going to let him out at 12 o'clock. Louis, he's got to know that his friend has been identified by the only witness of that murder, Louis. Now, we've got him on a car theft rep. You don't have to sign anything. You don't have to get involved. He's going to go to jail.
Great. That's just wonderful. That guy's going to be out in the street in less than a week for a car theft. Maybe even less time than that. That man happens to be a killer. You want to walk in the streets, lady?
Oh, it's okay if he kills Thibodeau, as long as you get your testimony first. Is that it?
Get the hell out of here!
Damn you!
Just shut up!
Now everybody just... shut up, all right? Catherine, look. That's the man, Catherine. That's the man.
Louis, you don't have to get involved. You don't have to sign anything. Please listen to me.
Yes, I do.
Give him the pen.
I have to.
So, of course, he then fingers the criminals for the cops, right? No, he doesn't. No,
like
that
on camera?
Scene would make you think that he was going to do just that, right? That's not what he does. Because then he looks at them and they say, just sign. And then he goes, I don't know them. I'm like, what was all this for? What are we doing? Why are we screaming at each other? What is
but
this?
I was imagining, honestly, when I watched that scene, I was like, the director of this movie went perfect.
Yeah.
I love that. That's final, guys. That's holy shit. You guys nailed it.
He was like,
don't
he,
even have to
he
do
dried
it twice.
His eyes and he was like, that's a wrap for today.
I'm going to the hotel. I'm going to have a little pina colada and yeah. think about this.
And I'm just going to lay down and await my Oscar. It's like it's so
because
dramatic
there's
when
so many
yells.
People fucking screaming.
They're screaming.
It's insane.
It's so much yelling.
He and clearly got in trouble a lot as a kid. He felt super comforted at the end of those scenes. He felt like, oh, God, feels like home. Cut.
Oh, yeah. So he does not. Louis does not work with the cops. As Mark was saying, instead, what he decides to do is that he's going to continue to find these guys. Things get more dangerous. His friend Patty is beat up in his apartment. Mm-hmm. And then someone shoots into Lou's house, prompting his daughter-in-law and his grandson to leave and go as far as the safe
haven of Long Beach.
Correct.
Go down there.
As far away from San Fernando Valley as they can and still be in LA County. So you're not slumming it in Orange County. Come on. We're not going to do that. Hell with that. We're going to stay in a...
You're not going to Seal Beach, bitches. We're not going down there. That's for the week.
No. We're going to Long Beach where it's safe.
Guys, we're no dipping criminals. Into MapQuest content. MapCast content.
It's true.
Save
well, I mean,
the
technically,
MapCast.
They could have gone to Cerritos if they really wanted to, like,
Mark.
Maybe buy a car. And then, you know, relax.
Cerritos Auto Square, you know, for those in Southern California who have that song burned into their brain.
Could
have
gone to La Mirada if they wanted to, get in the hills.
No, it's safe in Long Beach. And with his family gone, Lou confronts one of the drug dealers in the billiard hall by pointing a gun at the guy and telling them that he is death, just like he did in the opening scene, and then leaves and goes home. And booby traps his house like he's you know, like a grandpa version of Home Alone, and only sort of does it well, just kind of like two out of three aren't bad, really, I guess, but one was really crappy, and they figure that out right away.
Yeah, but his house still has the old knob and tube electrical, so that's going to be difficult. Like he's. Got the old porcelain knobs and the copper tubing going through his house. No ground wire. That's hard to, like, you know, do a good electrical job. Did I lose you guys?
Wait, are you talking about fixing it? Because he does it so that some guy will try to will electrocute himself trying to take the power out. Are you lost in the idea of how you would rewire his home, or are you talking about the
well,
plot
as soon
of
as he opened that, I was like, holy shit, that's an old fuse box. That needs to be updated.
you mentally went to Home Depot and you're like, how do I fix that?
I did.
I did. As soon as they opened it, I was like, oh God, you got to update your box, man. Yeah. Like, this is no good.
It's 1985, Mark. You can't.
Yeah, but that shit's from like the 1920s. You should have updated that a long time ago. Okay, anyway, move on, guys. Right. Everyone, let's move on.
Ryan, do you have anything to say about the wiring in this film? The
I am not a tradesman, but I've definitely subscribed to Mark's other podcast, the Trades podcast, yes.
The Tradescast is what, the Tradescast, where we talk about you want to get rid of the old knob and tube electrical, because back then you didn't have a ground wire. You just had copper electrical going through porcelain tubes.
Yeah, you said that before. Am I supposed to be blown this time? Are we expecting this time around we're going to be like, wait, holy shit. Wait, say it a third time. Wait, I'm not sure I got it.
Dude, porcelain knobs and tubes?
No, ground wire?
The tubes are copper, Erica. Come on.
That was hardcore. Shit, that's even worse.
Hey, you at least could rewire a house. Well, the rest of us are all lost. So, mm-hmm. you win on that.
We are still talking about electrical.
God, how many times are you going to say ground wire during this episode? I don't think I've ever heard that word so many times in my entire life as I
More than
tonight.
They said Louis.
He's 85 times he's said ground wire. But Louis then puts shoe polish all over his face, which, you know, we want to talk about things where you're like, oh no, I was like, that's going to take forever to take off, dude. You think that's not, you can't just use soap and water. That's going to take forever to get
it. I don't know. It looked like he had sweated most of it off before he even started on his mission.
Somebody putting shoe polish on their face, the first thing you thought was, oh no, it will take a while to get off. Not, oh no, like, ooh.
Well, yes, of course. I'm talking about when he's putting his fingers in the actual dish of shoe polish. I'm like, oh God, I hope he's not going to put it on his face because, oh no. When he starts streaking on his face, you're like, well, I don't know where this is going, but
hold on. Quick question.
This isn't Soul Man, so I think we're going to be okay.
Where did you think he was going to put that?
I don't know, dude. I thought it was going to get real spicy.
But we had already seen the silly home alone
just straight to his dong.
Straight to his donger.
Just straight to his donger.
You can't see my penis. You don't know where it is.
I'm all white man, but I got a donger. You would be surprised to discover. All right, we're cutting
that out
too.
He doesn't call it his donger; he calls it his ground wire.
Watch out for the copper tube.
Oh my God, dude! Charles Durning has no ground wire, and he preps for the guys to arrive at his home, and they do, of course, because he went to the pool hall and more or less, I guess, invited them. And this is what is even called out in this review from 1985 from the Corpus Christi Times. Mm. They explain this in the movie in their review. They say, but for sheer silliness, the much later shootout at Lou's home is hard to beat. The killers just drive up, park, get out of their cars, and stroll across the lawn carrying machine guns, shotguns, and who knows what on an ordinary suburban street with houses all around. When the shooting starts, nobody, of course, calls the cops until what seems like enough time has elapsed to subdue both Okinawa and Iwo Jima. Not sure about the phrasing there at the very tail end, but I what do you guys think about that? Because I did find that interesting when I read it, and but this is set in L.A., so...
Well, I wrote down immediately as I was watching this that they park in the front of the house, walk up the lawn with guns in hand. Look, anyone in this podcast, if we had the desire,
or we were
inspired to go and shoot someone in a home, wouldn't you park maybe a block or two away? Just like maybe get your license plate away from being in front of the house.
I'm gonna just put it out
there.
Then
maybe you would go through the back and then come in, not walk up the front lawn.
I just want to interrupt to tell you, since we're recording this and then gonna air it, that none of us have thought about going to someone's house and shooting anyone. None of us have pre-planned or premeditated this.
Nope. I'm also going to say, like, this is L.A. where this movie's set. And, like, if guys get out of their car and walked up with guns, you probably have a lot of people who, if they bothered to look out their windows and notice, would probably be like, oh, looks like it's going to get serious over there. And then go back to doing whatever it is they're doing.
Because this is before, like, Ring cameras and all that. So you have to assume that somebody's just looking out the window like, look at old Louis's front yard. Look at what the, what, your zoinks.
People might be upset that they stepped out of their car and walked up the lawn. They're like, I hope he reseeded that lawn because it looks like hell. Hope those guys are gonna, they're stepping on the, anyway, Ryan, your thoughts on this particular moment?
Yes, this moment was quite funny. In hindsight, looking at how they approached this place, lots of situations where I don't know, there's nobody that I felt empathetic to. So all of these I was just like, yeah, this is just about to go bad in from every which way, and then somehow it went worse.
Mm-hmm.
Question mark.
Yeah
fun scene. I mean the biggest thing is it was nice to finally have like actual tension and not just shouting matches,
right?
And
right.
An eruption out of a big copper tube.
Porcelain. Nice. But yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, too. In that shooting, in the whole shooting scene, we actually get a real view of the inside of the house. Now, I'm going to go ahead and say one of the things I loved was the house, which I think is probably worth $2 million today.
Yeah,
now, in this
sure.
movie, it looks like a garbage house,
mm-hmm.
but that house is like worth a mint now. But I love
that wiring.
I'm sure they've updated it, but I like
they don't even grab the ground wires.
Like you have a stone fireplace in the middle, separating the dining room from the living room. I was like, this is a great house. I tried to look on Redfin. Can I buy this house?
Right.
Can I move in here? Yeah. I like this house. Couldn't find it though.
Okay. I don't know where they are exactly.
Be careful. There's also lead in the walls in the garage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
At least. Inside the house, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Mark's already gone in there, but I think it's that time, Erica.
I do, too. I think it's time for things we loved and things we hated.
That's right. We're going to talk about the things we loved and the things we hated about Stand Alone. Mark, you said what you loved. Ryan, what did you love?
I loved the scene that we all kind of glossed over here is after he goes to the pool hall, or sorry, not the pool hall, the phone booth, and he goes to evade from these people chasing him by walking in a straight line through a water treatment facility or
mm-hmm.
something.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no attempt, like he runs, which I guarantee he had to train a couple days to be able to run as far as he did, but it's a straight line through these giant yeah. barrels. He does nothing to go left or right. And suddenly they've lost him. I was baffled as they had to have been at that point. That to me was the funniest scene in this entire movie.
For sure.
He also, yeah.
So
and he
funny.
Commandeers a car, and there's a woman who's like literally got her hair in curlers. God knows where she's driving. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh my God. I think it's the actress, I believe, is also on Saturday the 14th, but that's besides the point. Yeah. But it plays like a comedic beat as he's like, just drive, lady, drive. And she's like, oh my God, I don't want to die. So it becomes this sort of comedicness, but he's legitimately being chased by guys that want to kill him.
Yeah.
So it's like, what is happening here? And then, yes, he goes through all these like water tanks and he's like looking around and it's dark and he's, mm-hmm. it's like, and then he goes through the fence and he's right there by the diner that his friend owns. I'm like, wow. Los Angeles is not this small, everybody. Just so you know, not everything is this tight. Because to Mark's point about driving around to the back of the house, then what that says is that these guys went in broad daylight, shot this dude in a diner, and then drove up the street, took a right, took another right, drove down half a block, stopped, and went inside a billiards hall. And that's where they've hung out for a week since.
And nobody could find it.
Nobody knows where the driver is with their red van right there.
Yeah.
And their shotgun in the car. So I don't know. Erica, what's something you loved?
I love that red van. I was like, it's so obvious and such a like not discreet car at all for our baddies, for our movie.
Yeah, that's true.
Movie villains to have. I thought I really loved that. I also loved, I love Mrs. Whitehead. I thought she was a great nosy neighbor. I still think she really had the hots for Lewis. I love when she gets awakened in the night and we get a glimpse of her bedroom, which is just her bed, and she's sleeping alone. And behind
tonight.
He's busy.
Behind and above her bed is like a giant fan, like a giant not fan, like ceiling fan, but like a
decorative fan.
Yeah, but it's huge. Like and then just a frame picture of a duck.
Oh. What is it called, Ryan? What's the word for it that we're all struggling to get?
I'm going to go with the way that Mark said it, because I loved like an Asian fan. That was the way to explain it.
Sorry, I had three things that I love. Not done. The third thing was... not done. The third thing was that tank. That remote-controlled tank was badass. It was slow. It was big. It was bulky, but it actually shot, I guess, like a little cannonball or something, or like some sort of little, some
just
little
a, enough to like, yeah, to screw up Mrs. Whitehead's window.
Love that thing.
And shoot one of the guys
when
they're attacking his house. And the scale of it is thrown off because when you see it come through the bushes in the very beginning, it seems like a tiny little toy thing. And then when Charles Durning picks it up, just the top of it, it's giant.
Yeah.
And then when it's back in the house and it coming through again, they shoot it from up high. So again, it appears very small.
Mm-hmm.
So the size of it is always kind of like, how big is this thing? How threatening is it? Kind of throws things off. Something I loved was just the fact that I love that this was a Los Angeles where neighbors really look out for one another and know who each other are and seem to care about the neighborhood. I love the fact that I remember seeing this in college and not paying much attention to where it was shot and thinking, oh, this must be in some small town, because they're always like, don't, you know, this is a good neighborhood. We got to really look out for it. Cause like we've lived in our neighborhood for like 15 years and like, there's still plenty of neighbors we don't know. So like, we could not tell you what their names are. And I'm like, oh, this paints such a rosy picture of Los Angeles. That's so nice. Not reality, but it's very nice to look in a movie. Think maybe that could have been LA in the 80s. Who knows? But let's switch to things we hated. Mark, what did you hate?
For 70 minutes of this movie, nobody has a plan or moves with any sense of urgency. People make decisions at a very slow and deliberate pace.
Mm-hmm.
And this is while they're being chased down by people that will kill them.
Mm-hmm.
And this also applies to the bad guys, who are also moving at a very slow, nonchalant, we'll get there. We'll,
mm-hmm. Right.
We're going to do something. Mm-hmm. I don't know what we're going to do, but we're going to do something at some point.
Mm-hmm.
This movie moves at such a, like, you have a chance for like immediate tension. And for until like the last 15 minutes of this movie, nobody has a plan. And I'm like, what's going to happen in this movie? You've set all the stage, but even when Thibodeau's daughter and son are leaving to go to Long Beach, even when Pam Grier is leaving and these bad guys are about to come and kill him, he's still hanging out on the side of the car being like, hey, you know, I hope you're okay. Enjoy your car. And I'm like, people could drive up and kill you at any moment. Are you concerned?
He has the drop on them when they come up and onto his lawn. Like that confrontation could have been over in a second. It's a movie it's like a 90-minute movie with about 40 minutes of plot. It's basically a guy witnesses a murder. The cops want him to finger the witnesses. Right. And his friend wants him to not.
And then the last 10 minutes is like the moment.
When he stays and you know he's like tricking Pam Grier and he's not going anywhere, you're still kind of like, but does he have a plan? And even when he's like setting up the board and he's like getting his gun, you're like, does he know what he's doing here? Like, you have no idea if he can pull any of this stuff off.
Right. And the fact that at the end, when all of the gunfire and everything is taking place, his daughter and grandson pull up. Why would you go back to that house?
Why do you go back? Why do you go back?
Don't go. Hey, there's violence at the home you grew up in. Let's go drive there in my Toyota Tercel and we'll just get right in front and park in front.
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
Oh my gosh. I forgot. There's a fourth thing that I love. There's a Toyota Tercel in this. I feel like there's a period of my life where like everyone I knew, including my own parents, had a Toyota Tercel. Like everybody had that car.
Yeah.
Everybody did. Mm-hmm. I was telling Ryan, I'm like, man, I remember that thing. Everybody had that.
Yep.
God, it had a real chokehold on us in the Midwest.
And to that point, Mark, when she pulls up in that Tercel, she pulls up with her son getting out first. Like, he faces the house. So,
also a kid that's in the house, almost gets shot, and within minutes is like, Grandpa, why did they shoot at us? Like, not filled with, like, the normal terror of a child of being like, oh my God, I almost got shot. I'm going to go hide in my bedroom.
Yeah. Gordy's seen some shit, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that shit is sun damage to his face. Things I hated. Thanks for asking. Somebody put some sunscreen on Gordy. This is Los Angeles. He is in the valley.
He's a ginger.
He's a ginger. Come on. He is covered in sunspots and freckles.
Yeah.
Put some sunblock on Gordy. You want to keep him safe? Get out some fucking copper tone and put it on his face immediately. Things I hated. Yep. There we go.
Yeah. Yeah. Gramps is going to protect him from the evil men with guns, but who's protecting him from melanoma?
Nobody.
Nobody.
Nobody. Nobody.
Ryan, what did you hate?
A gripe and then a real thing. The whole original shooting in the diner makes no logistical sense to begin with. I mean, they drove up to the front door of the diner. You see this guy try to steal some donuts while the guy that's going to come in and shoot people walked behind the diner to peep in the window that was behind the cashier.
Well, he was the driver. That's the driver.
He had to walk out of his way.
He had to walk out of the car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And such
we take a deep dive into that, those logistics on the MapCast.
We map out the diner. Yeah.
There's a map of the diner. Pull out the blueprints.
It is very
It
is kind of poorly designed, but I will say there's something fun about that scene if you watch it and you can slow it down like I did on the Blu-ray, where you could rewind it and see the clear the stunt actor for Charles Durning leap. From the stool to the table, like the little bench and stuff that he jumps to, and you're like, that's not Charles Durning. But
Durning on the front cover or Charles Durning on the back cover?
Definitely Charles Durning on the front cover.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the real thing is near the end when they make a bold patriotic stance out of this that was just, especially not to take the New World Pictures podcast down a weird alley, but in this weird world that we find ourselves in, the unfurling of this giant flag and making a statement with it that didn't need to be made because we don't know anything about anybody involved in this movie or why it would be patriotic.
Yeah, it felt like just something they were just doing because, you know, this comes out like in 85 around the same time as Rambo 2. And it just felt like, I don't know, he killed the bad guys, so America, and he was a vet. And it was like, yeah, I'm sorry, dude. this is not this isn't First Blood, dude. You didn't make some grand statement about the difficulty of veterans or anything. I mean, it's like Mark said, this is a movie about a guy hedging on making a fucking decision. for about an hour and 15 minutes, and then he sort of decides something, I guess, maybe self-defense, and then they're like, America, like, I don't know I guess it was like, well, we have enough in here to maybe that'll fly. I don't know, but as Mark said, it still had that aesthetic of a nice warm New World blanket. But here's what I hated, and what I hated is pretty simple, and it's the script. This is bad, and I hate to pick on writers. I don't like to pick on writers. They are. I bet the writer wasn't even around for the production, as they often aren't. They don't get to see how the work is interpreted. But this is not great stuff from Roy Carlson. And every review I read of this movie, that was their key point. So I was like, okay, I'm not alone. I'm not standing alone. Everyone agrees with me. Carlson would go on to write 1994's China Moon. If anybody knows that one. And, but this is not good stuff. And there's a scene in particular, and this is a very small little section, but Ryan mentioned it. But here's just a little section. There's a couple scenes I could have clipped out, but it would have taken too long to make the point. So this is just a very succinct sign of some of the poor writing that is done here, Mark.
Highland Park Police Department, Sergeant Silver.
Let me talk to Detective Isgro.
1 moment, please.
Homicide, William speaking.
Isgro, please.
Detective Isgro's not here at the moment, sir.
I have to speak with Isgro or McKilmers.
Let me see if I can find him.
Please hold.
Detective Isgro, please.
I put the pants on.
Please, Isgro.
Detective Isgro's not at his desk. I have to put you back on hold.
If there's no like urgency of like, why do you need to talk to? I need to speak to him. The writer just had about five words that just kept moving around. Isgro, please, please, Isgro. Like, it's just like build something into the scene. He's trying to not be seen by this guy who's tapping on the glass of the phone booth. And he's just saying the same three or four words. I was like, ugh, wow, this is bad. This is not good stuff. I mean, there's some unintentionally funny stuff in this. I'll give it that.
In a clear glass phone booth.
He didn't run across the street or something to like make a phone call.
And he's not a demure small man. So he got into that phone booth and it's like obvious, you know, that he's in there.
If I was in his spot, I'd be like, maybe not this phone booth. Yeah. Let me do a little walkabout and see if I must find something else.
Yeah.
The music too at that point is just like a light flute, and it's just a little light flute. It's not like ominous. It's not scary.
The music also in this, I just drove me nuts. It was not
some good. Weird choices.
Yeah, weird. Very weird stuff. Very weird stuff. But I digress. I apologize, Roy. You might have a great story as to why you had wrote a great script that they ruined. I don't know, but to me, this was not a good script. Let's move on to favorite scene. Mark, what was your favorite scene?
My favorite scene is that scene where Thibodeau is like super proud. It's like a flashback scene to Halloween of 2018 where Derrick Rose, he scored 50 points and the T-Wolves beat the Jazz. And I was just like, oh, Thibodeau,
Mark,
you were so proud.
You're talking about Thibodeau, the former coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves. Not this movie. It's not a scene from this movie.
No, I thought this. No, it's not. I think you're wrong, Ryan. I think you're wrong.
It's not. I think you don't have a ground wire, sir. Ryan, what was your favorite scene?
So after he scored 50 points, I went to Letterboxd to look up the review, and Catherine Schmitz actually wrote in response to this, "The name Thibodeau is said so many times, I started forgetting what words were." And that was the thing that I loved the most in response to this movie.
That is great. That is great.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, if you come up with a good name for a character, why just leave it on the page? Make everyone say it out loud. Erica, what was your favorite scene?
I had three favorite scenes. So, three scenes. Not done. First favorite scene was the sexual tension between the neighbors. When Mrs. Whitehead comes over because a hole has been shot in her window and there's only one ground wire that can stuff it.
Well, there's been a hole shot in her heart.
Yeah. She comes over and they have that little sexy moment in the backyard. Second favorite scene.
Old people tension. Yeah. Like, old people were like, oh yeah, it's on. It's on. Not interpreted well by the younger generations or the grandson, but the older folks were like, oh, it's on.
It's on. These two have totally banged before, previously. Second favorite scene was the scene between Lewis.
Is that more sex that you're doing with your fingers there? What are you doing?
The scene between Lewis and his daughter-in-law in the kitchen, because that kitchen.
Oh, yeah. She loved the kitchen.
Oh, the kitchen. It's got the, like, harvest yellow appliances.
Yep.
And the wallpaper is sort of like a hand-drawn sort of, not cartoon. Cartoon isn't the right description for it.
House.
But it's like a scene wallpaper.
Yeah.
Oh, it was just.
It had the arch entryways and stuff. It was nice.
Chef's kiss. It was a real 80s kitchen. Yeah. And I really loved that scene for that. Third and final favorite scene was seeing Mrs. Whitehead wake up in her bedroom and just getting a glimpse of that sexy bedroom. I can't even imagine how horny Lewis must have felt when he saw that big Asian fan. He was probably so turned on by that. My gosh. And it was curly.
Almost shot out
hair.
Of his tank again.
Oh, my tank shot out early. Mm-hmm. Oh, the batteries. Must be the batteries. My favorite scene is right after this little section that I just played, when he, which we talked about, is when he gets chased, that we talked about earlier. And he's, so we already talked about it. We'll move on. Time for final questions.
Ooh.
Here are final questions for Standalone. Speaking of sexual tension, after he gets shot, who does Lou bone first? The nurse at the hospital or his next door neighbor, Mrs. Whitehead?
I forgot about her. I'm so glad you brought it up. That's where it starts, when she's helping him. And
she goes like, ooh, what a man.
Yeah.
She's like,
next
hello.
Door neighbor for sure. Because that's an easy win.
Because it's close.
And yeah, you don't have to spend the night. You just have to walk through the alleyway back to your house. Take it. With the nurse, she might live in fucking Culver City. And you're going to be
damn it. No.
I got to drive all the way back from Culver City. Fuck.
Not from the valley. There's no easy way in or out of.
No.
What about wild card? Maybe it's Catherine. She's known him forever.
Yeah. Oh.
Ooh.
God, she's been trying to save him this entire. She does save him in this movie.
Yeah.
She saves his life, and then he saves her life.
They kind of save each other. Yeah.
They do.
Well, he saves her first.
And any other movie, they would be kissing at the tail end, and then
absolutely.
The grandson
waving
the American flag behind him.
With his trumpet, like.
I don't love the way that you said kissing at the tail end, but I'll take it.
Well, hey, if it's.
The freeze frame would have been like. A kiss.
No, I mean, I think they'd be kissing each other's butts. That would be a great ending.
Oh, that's different. You play a different song.
But it would
song,
still be though. Warm from the gun.
Well, and they would both have tails in my version.
Thanks.
No explanation. They just have tails.
What I'm hearing right now is we have to rewrite this movie because you guys have great ideas and we can get this thing.
We can make this.
I'm ready to make this movie happen next week. So can we make this happen?
Let's make it happen. How long would the sight of a murder still be an active crime scene? Because Patty's opens his diner back up the next day.
I mean, no one told him he couldn't.
There's still bullets in the wall. And he's like, well, anybody need some coffee?
He's like, we cleaned it up as best we could.
There's too much pie to give away.
Yeah,
that's right.
Not to sell, just to give away.
Just to give away. Yeah.
And I mean, to be fair, he's got other things on his mind. The first line that we hear in the diner is that he just discovered the stuff he puts in the coffee are flammable.
Yeah.
I didn't understand that.
I think he's making a joke.
It was an alcohol joke.
Oh, God. I missed that, too. I really didn't. I did not know what he was talking about.
I didn't get that either. I was like, what the fuck is in the coffee?
Same. I was like, yikes.
Oh, shit. Which is Patty's also saying, like, I am toasted. That's why he goes in the back. Always. He's like, can you put some eggs down? Because I need to, like,
There's not even a chef back there. He's just drunkenly,
I've had three pots of coffee. I need a toilet.
He's talking to a picture that's just a calendar. It's just the calendar, like, photo.
Hey, Bert, put some eggs on.
Can you put some eggs on?
It's just a kitten, like, meow, in a basket. He's like, okay, Bert.
He calls her Aunt May.
Oh, come on, kitty. That kitty's not making any food today. Okay, well, anyway, so what exactly do James Keach and his partner do all day? Trick question. We already know they don't do anything at all day long. Do nothing.
I don't know, they put together a scrapbook of criminals for people to peruse.
That was in the station. They sit around and talk about baseball. They don't do anything all day long.
James, so frustrating. James Keach puts a little sun in his hair every day. Give that light,
that's just
nice
a little
golden
spray. That's a little spray.
Just a little golden glow.
Spritz.
Yeah.
A little spritz. Mark used that. Mark got when he had hair.
I did.
What did Lou shoot in his garage?
An early version of the tank. Like tank V1.
A prototype?
A prototype of the tank. He was like, this little fucking bitch. I'm going to shoot this.
That's an old man's garage. He probably just had like piles of newspapers and shit. Old pieces of wood that he's
old
just
Playboys
for a special project.
Well, we see him get all these guns out after. I'm going to envision now he went and got a gun to shoot the lock off of his gun cabinet.
Oh,
just because he loves guns.
There you go. At one point during the siege, Lou is shot. The siege of his house. Yeah. I'm really, really dressing this up, wow, this ending of this movie. Lou is shot while he's climbing out of a second story window and he falls to the ground.
Yeah.
That would have been it, right?
Yeah, that's it. That's over right there.
Like Charles Durning is, you know, no offense to him, and God rest him, he was a great actor and I enjoyed him in so many things. He's not a fit guy. But even if you are a fit guy, like, you go off a second story and you hit the ground, like, you guys won. I'm shot in the leg and I just fell from a two-story window. I am toast.
It didn't even knock his wind out. He just popped back up like he had done that many times before.
He did a quick roll first, even.
Yeah.
Look, I'm not a fit guy, but I'm more fit than Charles Durning. And when I watched that scene and he hit the ground,
humble brag.
I thought of myself and being like, oh, I'm fucking dead now. Because yes. I would have not gotten up. I'd be like,
no.
Well, this is it.
You know what
I got
I think
the
happened?
Wind knocked out of me. I might have busted a rib.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm just gonna lay here and wait for death to come.
This is it.
You know what I think happened?
Yes.
Because that is the in the house that happens right after he has the tank set up in the house, mm-hmm. and the two guys come and he shoots the tank at them in the house, and they're like, oh, it must be close by, because I guess they somehow know it's a remote controlled tank, and they run in the bedroom and bust him, and he has a moment where he's like, oh, I think in that moment he has a heart attack and dies. And he falls out of the window, and the impact of the hitting the ground brings him back to life.
Right.
And he rolls and he's like, I'm alive.
He's mm-hmm. dead in the fall.
Yeah.
Hits the ground, pops
alive,
back to life.
Rolls.
Also, to that note, like, when the paramedics are like, and he's like, I want to walk. Like, if I'm shot anywhere, I'm like, please pick me up. Put me in this. Like, I'm not doing any work now. Mm-hmm. Take me to the hospital and fix me, please.
Especially if you're Durning on the back of the poster, not the front.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right. This guy will walk
himself. Might be walking. Yeah.
You know what I think happened? He came out and he was going to have the gurney, and then he saw that nurse roll up in the car and she was like, oh, and he was like, no, let me walk. The Miwok. Yeah. I want her to see me walk. I want to look like a badass. Let her see me walk.
Is Mrs. Whitehead seeing this? Because I need a triangle happening.
Yeah.
That's really going to kick this hard into gear. Mm-hmm. All right, let's do some quick research here. There's not much about this movie. There's not much at all. It's disheartening because, what's that?
I tried. There's so little out there about this
movie. There's nothing. Shot in August 1984, according to IMDb, in Dallas. I do not think so. And here's another thing to, besides the copious amounts of palm trees that line everywhere, I thought maybe like the diner was in Texas, but when you see the outside of it, there's palm trees all along the side. I'm like, no, this is L.A.
Well,
this
they
is
do
shot
have
in LA.
Palm trees in Texas.
Save it. Okay. Save it for the Mapcast. Save it for the Mapcast.
I'm just saying, I don't know. I don't buy it because there's so many also those shots in the valley. If anything, there's some shots in Texas if they shoot there, but it's also some in California. So I don't know. But they say Dallas in 1984, and I don't even think it's August. It's not August 1984 because
you have blue street signs everywhere, and that is only Los Angeles.
Right. There's also, I'm not sure about August 1984 because there's an article about Pam Grier and the Toronto Star in December 1984 that mentions Standalone as a potential Christmas release date. So they were thinking it could come out in December of 1984. So August, that's a little too probably close. Mm. That's too close. So it had to be sometime before that. This is produced by Texas Star Productions, a company made up of investors in Dallas who made this, and also this. They made this one film. According to a review I read, they were looking to make another movie with Charles Durning after this, a detective movie, but I don't know what happened with that. Who were the investors behind Texas Star Productions? I'm not sure, but I have to assume executive producers George and Daniel P. Condos, who were brothers, or are brothers, executive producers of the film, and they never produced anything else. But if you're looking to hire an attorney in Texas, consider hiring Daniel P. Condos of Condos & Condos Law Firm, serving Texas since 1984, and personal injury. So he is still actively practicing law, but not making movies. The budget was around $2 million, a good portion of which I have to think went to Charles Durning and the rest of the cast.
Had to.
This is not a $2 million production.
Unless that tank was actual military.
Yeah, there's not not a lot in the movie that you just would have had to spend a lot of money on outside of cast. And I have to think it was just a giant payday for Charles Durning. I hope this was a huge payday for him. As I mentioned, it does open in 1985, September in 1985, Texas, Oklahoma, a few other states. It doesn't, I believe, make it all the way out to California. New World would often release movies in different states and sort of just move them around. So it plays with a bunch of other movies that New World put out at the time. It does play with The Annihilators. It does play with Tough Turf, other 1985 movies. But also released in September 1985 is the TV movie of Death of a Salesman, which Charles Durning got an Emmy nomination for Outstanding Supporting Actor and was also directed by Volker Schlondorf, the director of The Tin Drum. But yes, Charles Durning got an Emmy nomination for Outstanding Supporting Actor. Didn't win.
Who was he in Death of a Salesman? The dad?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
But he was great in that.
Yeah, I bet he was. By the way, the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, Ryan, to your point, said in their article, just wondering, whom does the film company think it's kidding with that newspaper advertisement for Standalone? The artist drawing in the ad shows a trim middle-aged man with the facial features of Charles Durning. This flat-bellied citizen standing, not alone, but that's okay, in his front yard, holding what appears to be a baseball bat, daring any felon to mess with him. as anyone knows who's seen the film, knows, Durning could portray Santa Claus without benefit of padding. Oh!
Yikes!
Damn!
Hollywood. Damn!
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 Body shaming.
That's harsh.
Holy shaming. Shit. Stomach with benefit of padding and the stomach region. Oh! Wow.
Jeez.
Oh. Yikes. This hits video February 12th, 1986, which tells me, basically, that New World picked this up. If it only cost $2 million, it wouldn't have cost, it probably cost them $2 million to pick up. They know they would easily double that in video sales. So they picked this up for video distribution, and I think that's probably their big plans for it. They did a tiny regional release in Texas and other states and then just put it out on video. They release it on February, though, with a bunch of other New World movies or New World video movies. You're probably not going to guess what they are, but could you have any guesses as to what they also would have put out in February? Erica has no idea. Ryan, no guess from you?
No, I Crimes of Passion is probably the closest I could have got
to. Okay. Well, the first would be The Ninth Configuration, a 1985 thriller. This is from the Atlanta Constitution, so they mentioned it was not shown in Atlanta theaters. It written by and directed, I believe, by William Peter Blatty of The Exorcist, who wrote the novel, and he produced and directed the film. Stacy Keach, Papa Keach, plays a secretive colonel running Center 18, a secluded asylum for military officers suffering breakdowns. Also featuring Jason Miller from The Exorcist. Five other films released. From New World outside, one of them being standalone, and the other one is Singleton's Pluck.
Oh shit!
Singleton's
a comedy
Pluck.
In which Ian Holm tries to get 500 geese to market in time for Christmas.
I want to watch that. That's amazing.
Coming soon to the New World podcast.
I do not.
Oh my God,
that is the second time I've seen Erica the sleeper agent wake up tonight.
I know.
First one was when you said Toyota Tercel.
Yeah. She loves geese.
I'm a complex woman, Ryan.
She loves Toyota Tercels and geese. By the way, that is $59.95 for Singleton's Pluck. Standalone is $69.95. And the Ninth Configuration is $79.95.
Jeez.
So wow. Just, you know, I forgot to get some of the
money well
the prices
spent.
In there. Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
And then, of course, after we watch Singleton's Pluck, we're going to have to make the porn version. Yeah. I'll let you finish it.
You all know what
Singleton's Plunk?
What?
Yep. Okay. Just want to make sure I got
it. I would have loved if any of you had guessed L'Addition. Which is another one that they released, offers Richard Berry as a prisoner unjustly accused of a new crime. It's new. It's a new crime. That'll be interesting. $69.95. Tuxedo Warrior is a James Bondian adventure.
I need you to stop talking because these are movies we have to watch.
He's getting it out.
You
oh,
mean
no.
Tuxedo Warrior?
Oh, no. He has a copy of it.
This one? Do you mean Tuxedo Warrior that I'm holding in my hands, the VHS?
Oh, no.
James Bondian adventure set in Zimbabwe and starring John Winan. The retail price is $59.95, but I didn't spend that on eBay. But
he spent $89.95.
And lastly, The Zoo Gang was released.
Night Zoo?
Oh, right.
No, Zoo Gang.
Night Zoo?
It's a different film about five teenagers who renovate a dilapidated nightclub, turn it into a popular spot, and then must fight another gang to retain possession. Jason Gedrick of The Heavenly Kid and Eric Gurry of Author had the cast. That was $69.95. That's what they released in February 1986.
What a mix.
Wonderful New World Video. And that is it. For standalone, Ryan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you. I was glad to be able to watch the inaugural mini behind the scenes episodes of the Mapcast, and see the birth of the upcoming New World Pictures podcast new merch shirt of geese in a Toyota Tercel. And I am just grateful for every time I get to interact with you.
Yeah, you really need those geese in the Toyota Tercel. That shirt's going to fly off the shelves. We're going to make some shelves for them to put them on, but they'll fly off of them. Mm-hmm. Probably because they'll be worn by geese. But thank you so much for coming, Ryan. Where can everybody find your work, Disconnected, and all the many podcasts that you host?
Everywhere under the name The Disconnected or at someonesfavoriteproductions.com, you can find all of the releases that we've been working on, the magazine that I publish, and actually fans of the show, recently released by Terrorvision. You can go pick up Gator Bait 1 and 2 in a 4K deluxe edition double feature release. A lot of people that love these movies would probably love both of those because they are both genuinely great in their own ways.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Big fans of exploitation, obviously. If you listen to this podcast, we delve into that quite often. And I'm excited to get that because I'm getting that. So that's coming. So I'm excited. For our podcast, if you want to listen to any of our other episodes from June Boom or any of our other themed months, go to our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. It's where all of our episodes live. You can also get t-shirts, much like the geese t-shirt and Tercel coming soon, and all of our other designs. There's plenty of designs there, and that helps support us if you get one of those t-shirts. Otherwise, if you don't want to buy one of our t-shirts or mugs or any of the many designs that we have, you can get all sorts of stuff, especially Op Center. You can get Op Center, all sorts of gear. Mm-hmm. You get all sorts. You can't get a t-shirt. All you can get is other products. But anyway, if you don't want to spend any money, just tell people about the show. Tell people about Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network, of which we are a part. And there are so many good shows, and come visit and listen to them all. And we'll see you next time on the New World Pictures podcast. Bye, everybody.
Bye, your team.